Hey, I've got great news. The election is only 43 days away. I don't know about you, but I'm sick of it. I'm sick of my Facebook feed. I'm sick of the trenching into warfare between the sides. I'm sick of the endless articles in the New York Times and the Washington Post dissecting every tiny little motive and problem and challenge of each of the candidates. I'm sick of it. But here's what hurts me a lot. A relative of mine, somebody I was very close to when I was growing up, like a sister in a lot of ways, closer than my own sister in a lot of ways, Facebook friend, Trump supporter. Hard, painful. Now, fortunately, they have a feature on Facebook where you just unfollow. So I don't even have to see her posts. I don't even have to know what she's saying. I don't have to know about her opinions or any of that. And that doesn't feel right either. After I titled this sermon, what's the title of this sermon? Why Can't We Get Along? People said, oh, Rodney King, Rodney King. Now you have to be, you know, of a certain age to know who Rodney King was. One of the original videos of police brutality, who said, why can't we just get along, in 1992. Apparently there's good reasons why we can't just get along, because here we are in 2016. And Jonathan Haidt has a lot of information about why we can't just get along. Those of you who were in the Happiness Hypothesis book group earlier this year, or who heard my sermon on that book at the end of June, know something about this moral psychologist. Not that he's moral, but he studies moral psychology, though I imagine he is a rather moral man. He tells us in a lot of ways that there are very good reasons why we can't get along. The title of his book is The Righteous Mind. Now, righteous, I read that Amos scripture, Amos, Hebrew scriptures, righteous. Doesn't that conjure up slightly crazy person, has such strong, intense feelings that they can't even hear anything else? Of course, worse than that is self-righteous, totally convinced that your own perspective is the right perspective. Merriam-Webster, remember him, the dictionary guy, says that righteousness is arising from an outraged sense of justice, of morality or fair play. And self-righteous is convinced of one's own righteousness, especially in contrast to the actions and beliefs of others. Self-righteous makes me think of Ted Cruz, remember him? Scorched earth policy, where he would rather shut down the government than lose on issues. And it reminds me of some of the Sanders supporters who would want to vote for Donald Trump because they believe that destroying our country will result in ultimate change. Now, Jonathan Haidt chose the word righteous for his book because he says that humans are intrinsically moralistic, critical, and judgmental. So let's explore that a little bit. That we're intrinsically moralistic, critical, and judgmental. It doesn't mean we're not a lot of other wonderful things, but we are those things as well. Some of you will remember the elephant and the rider. The elephant is all that unconscious part of us, the reptile brain, all the instinctive things. Unconscious to us, but dominates in so many ways how we act in this world. And the rider, of course, is our reason, trying desperately to make that elephant do what the rider would like it to do. And I use the example in my happiness sermon that anyone who stood in front of the refrigerator when they're on a diet knows who's in charge, and it's the elephant. So we find that particularly in politics and religion, we react from our gut. It's a gut feeling. It's not a rational feeling. And then in this wonderful way that our mind has, we make up stories to convince ourselves why that gut feeling is right. I think that tells me a lot about why facts are useless in our current environment. People's minds are made up, and they spin things however they want to spin them to reinforce those gut feelings. Another way that humans are moralistic, critical, and judgmental is in our tendency towards tribalism. It's an important survival instinct, right? Groups, cohesive groups working together to protect themselves. But it also causes the situation that we have at this time. And you know, Facebook can really make tribalism worse. I just unfriend or unfollow all the people that cause me difficulty. I just only hang out with people who think like me. Tribalism is alive and well in our country today. So one thing that come out of that gut sense and our tendency towards tribalism is a term called motive asymmetry, alive and well in our country today. It's a psychological term, motive asymmetry. It means my opinion, my perspective is based in love. And the people who don't think like me, their perspective and their opinion is based in hate. Does that sound like anything you may have heard or anything that you've experienced in our world today? But Hyde goes on to refine these ideas about some of these issues more in a refined way. He and his colleagues have developed some dimensions of morality. And they've started by defining how brain chemistry can set us up for viewing the world in a certain way. One of the basic differences in brain chemistry determined when we're born is that some people are set up with brains that are afraid of, are fear-based. They want to feel safe. They have a brain chemical that reinforces their need for safety and control. Others have a brain chemical that encourages diversity, risk, and change and openness. We're set up from birth with genetic determinations about whether we're going to be focused on keeping ourselves safe or whether we're going to be focused on being engaged in a diverse and creative way. Now, the moral dimensions that they talk about, so we have this overlay of how we're born and what brain chemistry sets us up. We've evolved to have some moral dimensions in our lives. And they're pretty straightforward. The first one they call care and harm. And this is the idea that we want to protect vulnerable children, vulnerable animals. It's evolved into us. Anybody who's responded to a Care for the Children ad knows that's the care and harm response that you're feeling. Morally based in our, we've evolved to have that moral perspective. Fairness, one of the crucial aspects of morality. Fairness is the golden rule. All religions, philosophies have a do unto others as you would have them do unto you rule. Loyalty is an important dimension. Sense of caring about community, being loyal to causes. This evolved so that we could be safe in our communities. It's part of that tribal piece, being loyal, considered a virtue. Loyalty is considered a virtue. Authority, in-group authority, evolved in an important way so that we could have structures. We could be in cities together. We evolved to respect and appreciate authority. And then the last one is sanctity. This started out as an idea about protecting ourselves from unsafe food and protecting ourselves from foul things. And it's now evolved to ideas about sex, idea about acceptable lifestyles. Sanctity is one of these moral foundations. Now, imagine just listening to those dimensions, you kind of had a response about which ones made sense to you and which ones didn't. And if you consider yourself on the liberal side, the care harm and the fairness ones, those are the strong two for people that define themselves as liberal. We care deeply about others, particularly vulnerable, and we care deeply about fairness. But our fairness is about equity. We think there should be a level playing field. We think people should have equal access to resources. Loyalty, authority, sanctity, not so much on the liberal side of things. In fact, we, in a lot of ways, define ourselves as being question authority and not being tied to issues about sexual orientation is a liberal embraced by liberals, varieties of sexual orientations, because we don't have that sense of sanctity. Conservatives, however, light up on all five of these dimensions. Care and harm is a human thing, wanting to protect vulnerable. Fairness is big for on the conservative side, but fairness is more about proportionality. Don't take away what I worked for. That is unfair. Different from equity. Loyalty is a very important quality. If you imagine your brain chemistry wants safety, loyalty would be important in a world where you can understand the order of things. And so would authority, another significant moral dimension for conservatives. And finally, sanctity. You see this in the issues around abortion, sexual orientation, that there's a certain way that things ought to be. And there's a sanctity of things, sanctity of marriage, a very strong conservative perspective. So you can summarize these things by saying that liberals are in opposition to hierarchy and oppression, and they have interest in changing laws and traditions and institutions to solve problems. And what they can't stand is oppression. The conservative side, with those five moral dimensions, they're about preserving the institutions and traditions that maintain a moral community. They can't stand disorder, and they're willing to tolerate authority even at the risk of oppression. Wow. Where do we go from here? Well, I am a UU minister, and I am going to bring in our UU faith into this conversation. Of course, Unitarian Universalists is by definition a liberal religion. That's how we define ourselves. Liberal in the sense of revelation not being sealed. Liberal in the sense of open to changing and expressing things. We review our principles every 15 years to see if we need to modify them or change them, because we recognize that humans change and the world changes. But you know, UUs can be righteous in our own way. Some of us came out of churches that had those kind of believe this or go to hell ideologies that were so foreign to us. And yet, we can't let into our hearts the possibility that somebody could find a meaningful belief in the power of Jesus. We find that we have to reject that we have a righteousness about our liberal perspective on religion. So let's think about these UU principles. A lot of people say it's so easy to be a UU. You know, you have these principles, you try to live them, but you're not required to believe anything. So let's take the principles, not all of them, but let's modify them a little bit on the theme of what I'm talking about today. The first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Let me add, respect for the inherent dignity of every person, not just the ones you agree with. How about justice, equity, and compassion in human relations? How about justice, equity, and compassion in human relations for those that have a different political view than you do? Gosh, it's not so easy, is it? Acceptance of one another. Oh. Acceptance of one another. There's not like, it doesn't say acceptance of people who are part of my congregation. It doesn't say acceptance of people who think like me. But of course, The hardest one of all is the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of which we are all a part. Because, as I've said so many times before, that interdependent web is not all of us holding hands after the service with bunnies and rainbows shining in the sky. It is every single being on this planet. It is all of us. It is the people you don't agree with. It is the people you don't like. It is all of us. And because these differences in perspectives are genetically based, evolutionarily determined, they're not going to go away. It's not a matter of them evolving. The people who don't think like us, the more strict conservative perspectives, you can't assume that they're going to convert to our worldview. You can't wait around for them to become enlightened enough to figure out that we're really right. But our UU faith calls us to do better. Let's start with the idea of tolerance. On matters where you feel the most self-righteous, can you imagine yourself tolerating somebody who has a different view from you, a strongly different view from you? Can you tolerate the right for them to have and hold that view? Many of us think, oh, tolerance, come on, I'm an experienced UU. Tolerance is such a low bar. Ask more of me than just to tolerate someone. But you know, for the most righteous among us, tolerance may be a good starting place. This is not a contest to see who can be the most enlightened. But what is beyond tolerance? Empathy. The capacity to understand or feel what another person is experiencing from within the other person's frame of reference. Whew. Hard, hard, hard. Can you find the empathy for Trump supporters? Can I find the empathy for my cousin? Can you find empathy that says they're not being duped, they're not stupid, they're not unenlightened, they have a different worldview? Now, of course, I'm not saying we tolerate misogyny or racism. Those are the edges of this. Those are the uncomfortable things that cross the line. I'm not suggesting that at all. These are moral lines that we draw. But I'm suggesting that we just try it just a little bit. Perhaps I'm asking too much. Perhaps I'm asking too much of myself. But I think unless we can start down that path, it's going to be very hard to find common ground in this polarized world. And you know, liberals, of which there are many out there, our brains are wired for diversity and risk. We believe that by engaging with diverse things, we grow and learn. So we should be the ones that are able to step up. We should be the ones to recognize that out of diversity comes change and fresh ideas, that this opposing forces sometimes, if they can find some common way to engage, can be transformational for our world. In Eastern thought, the yin and the yang are not enemies. There's a drop of each in the other. They come together to create a whole. So where do we start with this hard stuff? I saw a TED Talk by a man named Arthur Brooks, a conservative author, and he suggests an idea that I really like. He thinks that liberals should blur the lines, intentionally blur the lines. Draw in some conservative perspective. Find maybe an article or a media that is more in the middle or less than the extreme conservative, and find something in there that you can relate to. And share it with people. Wow, I was reading in the National Review last week And your friends are going to go, whoa. Blur those lines. Don't reinforce the silos. When you find yourself reacting strongly to something, open your mind. What could be the perspective of the person who believes this? I love to turn to the 13th century Sufi mystic Rumi. He says, sell your certainty and buy bewilderment. What else? Well, Brian Stevenson, the wonderful Just Mercy author, some of you know that book. We did another book group on that last year. He talks about the idea of proximity, the idea of engaging with the people that think differently from you. Proximity. Some of you may have seen the picture that was on the internet quite a bit today of Michelle Obama hugging George W. Bush. I don't know about you, but my heart just blossomed a little bit when I saw that. They have in common that he was the president who encouraged, supported, participated in the new African American History Museum that Michelle mentioned happening in D.C. And the hug is just a moment of connection, of a recognition that there was something in common between Michelle Obama and George W. Bush. The issue of marriage equality broke through in many places in this country because people who were opposed to it had a son, a cousin, a neighbor, a friend who was gay. Suddenly, you can't hate and vilify that person that you play golf with, that you go to church with. Proximity. So I suggest that you create some of your own proximity in a program that I'm entitling, Take a Conservative to Lunch. I can't claim this idea because Roger gave me this great TED talk of somebody talking about that. Take a conservative to lunch. You know one. You know two. You know some. Take a conservative to lunch. Or coffee, okay, if you can't do the whole lunch. Coffee. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion. Talk about what's important to them. Talk about what gives them joy. Talk about what gives you joy. Talk about what gives your life meaning. Talk about what's important. So I guess I'm going to call my cousin. I'm going to get together with my cousin and I'm going to open my heart to who she is fully. I'm going to strive to have empathy. I'm going to strive to minimize my judgments and my criticisms. I'm going to strive to break down those silos in a tiny, tiny little way in my own life. And to reach out to these people you're going to have lunch with, I suggest that you send them this invitation that again comes from the mystic Rumi. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there.